Welcome back. My first guest, as always, leading off as popular Luke Jones, doing great things not only for the Ravens, but the Baltimore Orioles. I know he's excited. This town, it's a two-sport town, and when both of the teams are doing well, Luke, there's nothing like it.
Absolutely, Dennis. I mean, what can we say about last Sunday? It was just such a phenomenal day, right up there with, you know, take your pick. And I can't really cite too many off the top of my head because, quite frankly, the Ravens and the Orioles haven't been good at the same time all that terribly often over the existence of the Ravens. So, but when you talk about Sunday with the Ravens going into Cincinnati and getting a really impressive win over the Bengals, when you consider everything working against them in terms of being on the road and all the injuries that they're dealing with and continue to deal with, as we'll turn our sights towards Indianapolis, and we'll talk about that here momentarily. But between that and then the Orioles finding out late in Sunday's game that they had clinched a playoff spot by way of what I guess the Texas Rangers losing, but coming back and winning, and then the post-game celebration in the clubhouse and just the excitement of that. I think anyone who watched this team at the end of last year certainly hoped that a playoff berth would be in the cards this year. But for this team to do what they did, clinching a playoff spot with 2 weeks to go and being in position as, you know, as they'll now be in Cleveland over the weekend and, you know, most likely not going to clinch until they get home. And certainly they, you know, they have to keep winning because the Rays are right on their heels. But I mean, just really exciting. And it was kind of wild to think that that Ravens game, and we'll get to that, but in my mind, as impressive of a win that the Ravens have had, maybe since early in 2021 when they beat Kansas City in that Sunday night game. I don't know if they've had a win as impressive as what they did against Cincinnati, but I think it was kind of overshadowed just because of the excitement of the Orioles. And that's okay, right? In week two, the Ravens can be overshadowed. You know, I mean, I think that's okay. And like you said, you can be plenty excited about both, but just a really special day, a special weekend, a great finish to the weekend for the Orioles. And then they go to Houston and win 2 out of 3 from the Astros, just continuing to win and win in unusual ways. And still plenty of questions about this team and its bullpen. But gosh, just you said it. It's a really special, fun time to be a Baltimore sports fan, and plenty of reasons to be optimistic about both teams here in town.
Luke, your thoughts about the Orioles pitching, particularly the bullpen. I guess that's the area we have to look at on this team to identify a potential area of concern as they march towards the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those deals, Dennis. And look, this isn't unexpected from the moment that Felix Bautista walked off the mound a few weeks back with the elbow injury. And I know he's still throwing and he's throwing some bullpens. And, you know, there's some non-zero chance that he's maybe going to pitch in October, but certainly not something that you can count on or expect even at this stage as he continues to throw. And you think about long-term what that means for him and potential Tommy John surgery after the season. We knew from that moment that there were going to be questions about this bullpen. I mean, that's inevitable when you're talking about a guy who had been the best, quite possibly the best reliever in all of baseball, let alone for the Orioles and the American League and being an all-star and all that. So it's tough, though. I'm working on a story at BaltimorePositive.com right now, just looking at that. I mean, you feel good about Yennier Cano. I mean, he's been an all-star reliever. And after having, you know, kind of a lull over the summer where, you know, in July and early August wasn't pitching his best, you know, looked a little more mortal than he had the rest of the year, he's pitched really well since then, save for a hiccup or two. So you feel good about Cano. CNL Perez has been excellent since July. You know, looks like the CNL Perez that we saw last year, who was just an outstanding lefty reliever for the Orioles in 2022. So you feel good about them. You feel good about Danny Coulomb. Wednesday's result, notwithstanding, he's been really, really good for them. So you feel good about those three. You know, Jacob Webb's been excellent, save for a couple appearances since he was claimed off waivers from the Angels. So I'm even ready to sign off on him. But you look at the rest of that bullpen, and it's going to change, and it might even change by the time someone's listening to our conversation right now, Dennis. But, you know, there's excitement about DL Hall because you see the arm. He flashes the moments where he has done a good job, but it's been inconsistent. Jorge Lopez, I mean, Brandon Hyde clearly has faith in him going back to last year, but he struggled. He's not eligible for the postseason roster anyway. So I don't know how much longer you can keep sending him out there in some of these close situations, high leverage situations. Mike Bauman, same thing for him. I mean, he was good in the first half of the season or showed promise and has been a struggle. And you know, he was in the minors until being recalled recently. And, you know, it looked like Fuji had turned a corner here of late and had really put together a nice stretch of appearances where, you know, he wasn't walking as many batters and, you know, was starting to look like a guy that you might be able to count on. And certainly that's turned for the worst here over the course of the last 5 to 6 days. So a lot of questions there. And, you know, we could still talk about guys that are at Triple A Norfolk at the moment as you and I are talking. I mean, can you bring up a Joey Crable? Sure. Can you bring up a Brian Baker? Sure. What's going on with Tyler Wells? As we kind of thought maybe he would factor into the bullpen, but, you know, it's been an up and down transition for him, you know, dealing with some arm fatigue a couple weeks ago, and, you know, he didn't pitch for over a week. So just a lot of questions. I think the wild card, and look, this is an overreaction because we're basing it off of one outing. Maybe Jack Flaherty can transition into a bullpen role. And we saw him acquit himself pretty well on Tuesday night. He's got an arm. He's got stuff, especially if it's in shorter outings. Is he someone that, you know, he doesn't have a whole lot of time to get accustomed to it? I mean, we're talking about, you know, the Orioles, you know, even if they win the division and they're not playing until the divisional round, I mean, we're talking a little over 2 weeks away. I mean, it's right around the corner. I'm going to use an example here, and I know Kyle Gibson was even asked about it because he was part of that Philadelphia Phillies team last year. But Zach Eflin, who was a disappointment for the Phillies as a starter in 2022, he transitioned to a bullpen role, and he pitched really well for the Phillies. And he parlayed that into a contract with the Rays where he's starting again and has had a fantastic year for Tampa Bay. So I don't say that with any level of high expectation for Jack Flaherty, but it does really speak to where they are right now with their bullpen, where you have Cano, CNL Perez, Danny Coulomb, Jacob Webb, kind of sort of DL Hall. After that, who knows, Dennis? So I think that's where you look at your offense. That's where you look at the rotation. And be remiss if not mentioning, you know, Kyle Bradish with another outstanding effort against the Astros. He's pitched going back to last year, Dennis, and we're talking about the Astros, the defending world champions, right? He's pitched 22 and two thirds scoreless innings against the Astros in three starts going back to last year against them. I mean, he has been fantastic, and Grayson Rodriguez, what he did against the Rays over the weekend. I mean, eight shutout innings. I mean, that was the guy that we've been talking about for the last 2 to 3 years, you know, even longer than that in terms of his prospect status and what he could be. So, you know, you feel great about those two other than just, you know, the lingering question of both these guys have thrown career highs in innings, and, you know, you keep your fingers crossed on that front. And, you know, they haven't been in this position before, but you feel great about them. You know, Dean Kramer, more good than bad, you know, even if he's had a couple outings over the last few weeks that haven't been quite as strong. And, you know, John Means was competitive against the Astros on Monday night. So, and Kyle Gibson, good or bad, I mean, he's a veteran. He's the guy that has the most experience, albeit not a whole lot of postseason experience. So, you know, when you're talking about a bullpen that has three or four guys that you feel good about, I'm not saying that that can't work for the postseason, but if you want to optimize that, if you want to give yourself the best chance for that to work, they're going to need Bradish and Grayson Rodriguez to continue into October, what they've been able to do. In Bradish's case, really since May, you know, since April, you know, he had a little bit of a rough go of it. Remember, he had the IL stint. His first start got hit on the foot with a line drive in Texas. But since late April, he's been one of the best pitchers in the American League. You know, probably a guy who, you know, should get some Cy Young votes, you know, at least, you know, for second, third, fourth place, that kind of deal. He's not going to, you know, he's not going to win it, but he's been that good. And Grayson Rodriguez has been just as good, if not maybe even a little better than Bradish over the last couple months, you know, since coming back from his demotion, you know, to the minor league. So we'll see. I mean, we have these questions and they're fair questions, but at the same time, Yeah, their bullpen was awful on Monday night, and they still found a way to win because they swung the bats so well. On Tuesday, it was unconventional, and Hyde had to go to Cano and Perez for a third straight night, but they got the win, and that put them in a position on Wednesday where, how that played out shouldn't have been all that terribly surprising. I think it was one of those times where Brandon Hyde said, "I'm going for it. We need to get Tuesday's win. We'll get a series win. Hopefully, Kyle Bradish pitches well enough that gives us a shot." And they had a shot. And quite frankly, even with Fujinami struggles, even with Coulomb giving up the game-winning run in the bottom of the ninth, they scored one run. You got to score more than one run, and that's where you put it on the offense just as much as the bullpen. But they still took two out of three from the Astros, so you feel great about that going into this weekend. The final, hard to believe, Dennis, the final road series of the regular season. And I mean, this is a team that has 50 road wins. Think about that for a second. I mean, whether you're a big baseball guy or not, it translates in any sport. It's difficult to win on the road at that kind of a rate and to be in a position where you've won 50 games on the road going into this final four game set against Cleveland. I mean, that's special. So it's really a credit to this team. And even with some of these questions, and it's okay to have questions, they're not a perfect team, but boy, they've just played such great baseball. And even with the losing streak that they had going into last weekend, and people started getting a little nervous and starting to doubt, they came back right back and they won four in a row right after that. It's just, that's the mark of a really good team. And we'll see how it plays out. And like I said, not in a position that they're likely going to clinch over the course of this weekend, but they can come home. If they take care of business against the Guardians, they can come home and be in excellent shape over their final two home series and be in a position where they just take care of business to a reasonable degree. They'll be division champions and the number one seed in the AL.
Yeah, they certainly have a favorable schedule, Luke, looking at the teams that they're playing to close out the season. So hopefully they can use these games to get that bullpen a little bit more stable and figure out who they're going to use and when.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why the Jorge Lopez thing, I've struggled with that. You're always looking at this from through the lens of two different objectives here. Of course, you're trying to win that night's game. You're trying to win the next day. You're trying to win that series. You're trying to hold off the Rays. At the same time, there is a evaluation going on here in terms of how's your bullpen going to look in October? And boy, there's still at least as many questions as answers, as I just laid out a couple minutes ago. So you're trying to evaluate. That's why I've struggled with Hyde going to Jorge Lopez so much because, look, he was a great story last year. I understand the Orioles bringing him back. I had no problem. He's a waiver claim. It's not as though they're holding someone, he's holding someone back that deserves to be in the majors that's now in the minors. I mean, they've been cycling through guys, but in the case of Lopez, he hasn't pitched very well. That's stating the obvious. And even if he does, okay, I get it. You're trying to win the division. And if he was pitching lights out, then great. You keep throwing him out there and, oh, well, he can't pitch in the postseason for you just because of the eligibility rules. But he's not pitching well, and there's no October upside to seeing if he can work out his issues. So that's where I question how much longer you can keep sending him out there in any kind of a situation where it's a close game because he's just not getting the job done. So, we'll see how it works out. And again, in the meantime, need your offense to be ready to score runs, and they need to continue to get good starting pitching. And, when you look at this weekend series, Grayson Rodriguez, Dean Kramer, John Means on Saturday, and Gibson going on Sunday, this is a series that you're going up against the Cleveland team that's been disappointing. Make no mincing words about it. This is the kind of team that you should go in there, even on the road, and win three out of four. And I think that's how the Orioles will view it going into this series.
Luke, as much as I've been into the Orioles this year, and much as I love the team, at my core, I'm a football guy.
Yeah, of course.
I love the Ravens, and they are one of the few that predicted an upset victory by the Ravens against the Bengals. And I did that on the strength of the defense and how they've handled them the last several times they've played them. Looks like Mike Macdonald has figured out how to frustrate Joe Burrow, and also the calf injury, which still factored in. We saw him grab it during the last series of the game, but still, that defense only gave up 17 points, 7 of 4 coming in the form of a punt return for a touchdown.
They really played a clean football game on defense and offense. Now, the special teams, that's another story, giving up a punt return for a touchdown, but you trust a John Harbaugh-led team to figure out their special teams problems early, that they're dealing with right now. Not too concerned about that in a big picture sense, but yeah, I mean, you look at the defense and Mike McDonald, obviously the approach he's taken compared to Wink Martindale, which I'll continue to say in 2021, and look, this has worked out, making the change. Mike McDonald, probably going to be talking about him becoming a head coach at some point in the next few years. That's probably the kind of path that he's on right now. But with Wink, it was very much put the corners on an island, which was great when Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters, pre-ACL injury, were your guys. But obviously in 21, they didn't have Peters. And, it was a case where they very much struggled against the Bengals. And look, I mean, the Ravens, we know they were decimated by injuries even before that season started. But just the approach that they've taken, more cover two. We talked about this a lot last year, really being in a position where just trying to keep everything in front of them and forcing Burrow to check down, forcing him to throw underneath, and forcing them to chew up clock and go 12, 13, 14 plays to score touchdowns. And we saw that play out. I thought it was interesting, even with Marcus Williams and Marlon Humphrey being out and not playing on Sunday, McDonald mixed it up a little bit more. I mean, they did some different things, and they were even more aggressive with their corners than I thought they would be. They played more press than I thought they would. Now, granted, they were playing a lot of two high shell and in instances where they did that. But Brandon Stevens, what can you say about him? I mean, he's played well, and that's not something that you would have expected. I mean, my goodness, the Ravens had him working at safety in the spring and the early portion of training camp until the injuries at corner really started to pile up. And they had Yassin and Ronald Darby rotating at the other corner spot, and they held up well. So really a testament to him. The pass rush really wasn't a factor, and that was almost by design because they knew Burrow was going to get rid of the ball so quickly. So was really a compliment to the Ravens. And really, I mean, what's going on with the Cincinnati Bengals? Look, I'm not ready, and I said this to Nestor a lot. I mean, they were 0-2 last year. I think it's important. We talk about week one to week two, but even week two, don't overreact to what you're seeing in week two. But at the same time, you said it. I mean, with the health with Joe Burrow, and what I was really surprised by was just how disappointing the Bengals defense was. I mean, and again, credit to Lamar Jackson, who I thought played his best game since the first 3 weeks of last season. I thought he was outstanding with the quick game and getting the ball out, knowing that they had injuries on the offensive line. But man, a Lou Anarumo defense that had held even Lamar Jackson-led Ravens offenses to what? I think under 20 points the last two times they had played, even with Lamar healthy. The Ravens offense was really good, and the Bengals defense not so good.
Oh,
So
that opening
really a
drive, I
compliment.
mean, that opening drive with the Ravens not to cut you off was epic. It was just a almost an 8 minute drive.
Yeah, I mean, it really set the tone, and I thought that was good for the Ravens being on the road and knowing that. And we talked about this last week. I mean, yes, they ultimately scored 25 points against the Texans, and that wasn't a performance to be overly down about. But anyone who watched it, it wasn't overly impressive either. Let's call a spade. So for them to go out and start the football game like that with a touchdown drive that takes up half of the first quarter, and that being on the heels for Cincinnati. Of the stinker that they had in Cleveland. I mean, it really set the tone for the game and, put the Bengals on their heels. And let's face it, by the time Cincinnati really turned it on and the Bengals offense came to life, at that point in time, the clock was starting to work in the Ravens' favor. So even though they scored a couple touchdowns in the second half, again, they had to take up so much time. And that was something that I really thought. And I thought, quite frankly, Cincinnati should have been showing more urgency in terms of playing a little more no huddle, getting out of the huddle quickly, playing with more tempo on their final touchdown drive because they scored, and the Ravens were in a position where they only needed to get a couple first downs then to ice the game, and they were able to do that. So really a compliment to the Ravens with how they played in totality in week two, and certainly too early to panic if you're the Bengals, but they better be feeling some urgency, and they better hope that Joe Burrow's calf is right because, I mean, their backup quarterback situation, I've already forgotten who their backup quarterback is since I was reading about it on Monday. So. I mean, it is definitely this is an opportunity for the Ravens, and you know, obviously they're playing Indianapolis, and doesn't look like the Colts are going to have Anthony Richardson. I mean, we'll see. It's a concussion protocol situation, so as you and I speak at this moment, you know, still a little too early to know whether he'll be in or not. But it's a great opportunity for the Ravens to improve to 3-0, knowing that they do have a couple AFC North road games coming up. And I get it. The Ravens are better than the Browns and the Steelers. I'm confident in saying that right now, but still division road games, and we know how that works. And also a reminder, as much as we were talking about things that needed to get better for the offense in week one, week two, you're thrilled with the offense, but it is also a week-to-week league. And as John Harbaugh pointed out, even though I'm not too concerned about the thoughts of an Indianapolis upset on Sunday, at the same time, that is a front that's pretty good. And you are still talking about a Ravens offensive line that played so well in week two, but it is still a banged up offensive line. So the point being, Ravens can't be looking past this game. They need to make sure that they're focused and doing the necessary preparation and not just rolling the ball out on Sunday and thinking they're going to win.
No, you're right. You took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say the same thing in regard to it's such a week-to-week league. We've seen injuries so far, season-ending injuries, whether you want to talk about Aaron Rodgers, J.K. Dobbins. We saw Nick Chubb Monday night go down a horrific knee injury, and he was having a great game. To me, he's a top three running back in the league. So with him going down, and I know Jerome Ford came in and did a nice job, and now they signed Kareem Hunt. But still, when you lose those significant pieces, it really does alter the look of your offense, your defense, what have you, when you lose these superstars.
No question. I mean, and we talked about that last week with losing J.K. Dobbins. I mean, by no means do I think that injury sinks the Ravens Super Bowl hopes. And I mean, we saw in week two how well they played without him in Cincinnati against a Bengals team that, you know, I picked to win the division and the Ravens to be just behind them, you know, as a wild card. But at the same time, when you lose players like you just mentioned, it does alter your upside a little bit, right? It does force you to view things through a different lens. I mean, look at the Ravens this week, this past week, you know, you're going from J.K. Dobbins, who wasn't going to be the bell cow necessarily in the sense of I expected him to get 25 to 30 touches a game. I mean, there are so few running backs in today's day and age that do that, but he was very clearly going to be the number one. And then you're going to, okay, well, Gus Edwards and Jake and Justice Hill are one and 1A, and that worked out well. Well, lo and behold, Justice Hill's dealing with the toe injury this week, and that's one reason why the Ravens have brought in Kenyon Drake to their practice squad, and someone who was with them last year. But how quickly can he get up to speed in terms of learning? You know, it's a different offense than it was a year ago. But, you know, what's that mean for Melvin Gordon? What does that mean for someone like Owen Wright, who's on the practice squad? So it is such a week-to-week league. And, you know, I think 2 years ago, when they beat Kansas City in week two, you know, that Sunday night game, I mean, they were riding high. And then if you recall what happened the following week, they went to Detroit and they needed an NFL record field goal from Justin Tucker to beat the lowly Lions, or they would have been, you know, they would have lost that game. So not to say that I expect it, you know, that I'm picking an Indianapolis upset, because I'm not. I think the Ravens are going to win. I think they'll handle their business, but it is such a week to week league. And as much as, you know, teams look at week one and things look so terrible or things look so great, week two can turn around and it's the absolute opposite. And that being said, what you are in week two does not mean that that's what you're going to be weeks 3 through 18. So it's a long season, matchup dependent, injury dependent. I mean, the Ravens, you know, they're banged up this week. Even, you know, the early indications might be more banged up now than they were even last week, which is just saying something. You know, we know our Darius Washington's on IR, which is unfortunate, because you know, I think he's flashed a lot of promise being their nickel. So how's that going to look? Do they go to Arthur Millette, or do they go to Kyle Hamilton back in a nickel kind of role? And you're counting on Daryl Worley to play on the back end next to Geno Stone. So, you know, is Indianapolis the offense that's going to exploit that? Probably not. You know, I don't, you know, I think Minshew mania, you know, from where it was a couple years ago has certainly died down. But that said, he is a backup quarterback who plays with some, you know, reckless abandon, which can get him into trouble, but it can also afford an offense some opportunities to make some plays that maybe you don't see with a typical backup quarterback. So it's a week-to-week league, and that sounds boring saying that. That sounds like you're sitting on the fence a little bit to say that. I think the Ravens are going to win Sunday. But that said, you still need to prepare and respect every week's opponent, because especially this early stage, especially talking about the Colts with a new coaching staff and you know some new personnel in certain spots, there's still some unknown there. And the Ravens are in a position where they still have to prepare a little bit for Anthony Richardson if he does clear concussion protocol. And you certainly have to be ready for Gardner Minshew, who, and you know, those two have some similarities maybe in terms of not drastically changing the offense. I mean, Minshew can move around a little bit, but at the same time, they definitely have some differences with their skill sets. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But again, the Ravens playing at home, certainly no excuse not to go out there and handle your business, even if it's not a work of art across the board, as you know, it really felt like in a lot of ways for most of Sunday's game, both offensively and defensively. Not the 2000 Ravens, you know, I don't want to make too much of it, but they just played such a clean football game and they executed their game plan so well.
No, absolutely, Luke. Have there been any indications by Coach Harbaugh or the Ravens in regards to Marlon Humphrey and Ronnie Stanley or Tyler Linderbaum? Any update on their injuries and any ETAs for their return?
No, I mean, John Harbaugh, he went into
Got
deferring
it.
to the injury report mode. I mean, I think at this point, when you kind of look at this, none of those guys were practicing Wednesday. In the case of Humphrey, I mean, he's been out over a month now. I mean, I think any notion of him playing for that week's game, he's going to have to log a full week of practice. I mean, at least, even if it's a limited, and then full go, you know, I can't fathom him only practicing 1 or 2 days this week and then suiting up. I think the idea, you know, maybe he's out there by the end of the week, running around a little bit with designs of him playing against Cleveland. You know, Ronnie Stanley, let's call a spade with Ronnie. I mean, he's a tremendous talent, but generally speaking, when you have time frames for injuries in mind, it's usually not on the shorter end. You know, Linderbaum, he was walking around even in the locker room last week, but anyone who saw the replay of him getting rolled up, I mean, that was a pretty nasty ankle sprain. So he's a tough guy, but you know, again, a young guy. Are you going to have him only practice a little bit this week and play? Probably not. And I think you know, one piece of potentially good news that we did find out earlier in the week, that Marcus Williams not going on IR, and he's not going to have surgery for the pec injury. Now, that doesn't always mean that that's going to be you know, that he's going to come back and everything will be fine. Sometimes you're taking calculated risk with injuries, especially if you're talking about surgery and potentially missing the season being the alternative. But you know, that's kind of where they are. And you know, we'll see about Justice Hill. We know that Odafe Owe dealing with an ankle sprain, that you know, I went back and saw the replay of that you know, that one, you know, got rolled up pretty good as well. So he was in a boot, in fact, leaving the stadium on Sunday. So I'm guessing we're probably not going to see him this week. You know, Beckham, saw him in the locker room. You know, he's walking around okay, but that ankle, and I don't know for sure if it's the same ankle that he injured way back when as a member of the New York Giants that, you know, cost him the rest of a season 1 year. But, you know, with Odell Beckham, I think we had the expectation going into the year, probably wasn't going to play 17 games. So if he is dealing with a little bit of something, this is probably a week you point to. And even looking at how they played last week without him for the entire second half, I mean, if Nelson Aguilar is going to play like that, Zay Flowers doing what he does, see if you can get Rashad Bateman involved a little bit more. You got Mark Andrews back and healthy now. I think they can be okay on that front. So, you know, long answer to what you asked me, but you know, probably not a whole lot of optimism for those guys that you mentioned playing this week. But again, we'll see as we get a little bit closer to Sunday if that changes at all.
They just have to keep scoring points. And I think with Mark Andrews in there, he opens up a lot of things for a lot of guys. And he's Lamar Jackson's security blanket. But they have some tough, not to look past the Colts, but they have some tough road games coming up at the Browns, at Steelers, divisional games. And of course, the game across the pond against the Titans before they come home versus the Lions. But it was encouraging to see Lamar Jackson set his feet. It seemed like he was going through his progressions. He threw some very nice balls. He spread the wealth around. Didn't seem like he had target fixation, whether it was Mark Andrews or Zay Flowers. And he just did a great job when distributing the ball.
He was so efficient. The ball came out quickly. I mean, Look, and part of this is just, it wasn't even a Greg Roman thing or anything like that. I mean, when you have a quarterback like Lamar Jackson, inherently he's going to hold on to the ball a little more because he knows that he has that escapability, right? I mean, that incredible athleticism and speed. I mean, we've seen it over the first 2 weeks of the season. As much as they're not using a lot of design runs with Lamar Jackson, he's still taking off and running and still getting his yards, and that's still their best run play is a Lamar Jackson scramble. I mean, let's be honest. So you always have that element, but I think going into this game, knowing that Bengals front going up against an offensive line, I mean, John Harbaugh can say all he wants about, confidence in those guys going into the game, but until you actually see it, you don't know. So I mean, I thought the way they played was exactly how they were going to need to play. Quick game, ball getting out. Lots of good timing, get into a rhythm with a passing game, and use your running game to complement that. Hope that you have a lead, and then in the second half, you lean on into the run more. So, and that worked out beautifully. I mean, that's what you want to see. And I think if there was going to be, on a simplistic level, going from Greg Roman to Todd Monken, that's probably what you were looking to see. Not necessarily that Lamar Jackson was going to suddenly become this quarterback that's throwing it 45 times a game. Not that the Ravens were going to become the Kansas City Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes, but be a team that be a little more aggressive, throwing on first down, using quick game, using timing routes, using rubs, all those different things that seem to be mostly absent over the years in a Greg Roman passing game, and to do that, and then have your running game. Pick up second and short, third and short. And that's kind of the analytic way of looking at football in 2023. Really, it's passing, to get a lead and running to protect the lead. I mean, that's kind of what you do. So I think the Ravens executed that very well against Cincinnati. And that said, credit the offensive line because even with Lamar Jackson getting the ball out quickly, times where he did stand back in the pocket, like for example, the deep ball to Zay Flowers, that was just a pretty connection. Great throw and fantastic catch. I mean, the touchdown to Aguilar, I mean, it doesn't get prettier than that in terms of quarterback to receiver connection. But on those plays where he did hold the ball a little bit more, the pass protection held up. So it's great to see. But again, you do it in week two, it doesn't mean it automatically comes in week three. So it's always a moving target. It's always a new challenge, a different defense, different personnel, different matchups you're trying to exploit. So it was very encouraging to see that. And as I said, for my money, easily the best Lamar Jackson had looked since the September of last year, where remember those first three games where Bateman was healthy? Lamar looked like an MVP candidate, but Bateman got hurt in that Buffalo game in week four. And from that point, it was kind of all downhill for the offensive operation entirely, over the course of the rest of the season. And for this Ravens team in general, as impressive of a win as they've had since, as I said, that Kansas City game in week two in 2021. So that doesn't, just because you do that, doesn't mean that it's automatically just going to be there in week three. You got to go put in the work and hope you stay healthy. Hope, my goodness, hope you don't have any more injuries of significance. At least, hope maybe the injuries chill for a couple weeks at the very least until you get some of these guys back. But, that's part of it. We talk about the war of attrition that always goes on in the NFL. And, unfortunately, as much as the Ravens had, despite some nagging injuries in training camp to some guys here and there, they didn't have a bunch of season-ending injuries before the year started. But boy, it's already hit them here over the first couple of weeks, and you hope that slows down because, health is so critical for any team. But the potential that they showed going out there and beating the Bengals on the road, I mean, I think that for anyone who was doubting the upside, the potential for what this team could be come December and January, it was a nice little preview to see in week two in terms of really seeing just how high the ceiling can be.
For sure. And it looks like Keaton Mitchell, he'll be eligible to come back in week five, hopefully give the running game another boost. But look, this thing is a work in process, and this Monken offense, we'll see it evolve as the season goes by. Luke, I appreciate your time, your thoughts, your insight. As always, please tell our listeners where they can find you on WNST's social media, Baltimore Positive, your blog, and all the other great things that you do.
Absolutely. Everyone can follow us on Twitter at WNST. You can follow me personally at Baltimore Luke. Check out my blog at BaltimorePositive.com, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. Latest on the Ravens, 12 Ravens thoughts, injury report, of course, post-game reaction to as the Ravens take on the Indianapolis Colts, trying to improve to 3-0 on the season. I'll be on the scene at Camden Yards all next week as the Orioles look to clinch a not clinch a postseason spot. They've already done that. Clinch the number one seed in the postseason and clinch their first AL East title since 2014. You want to be on the WNST Baltimore Positive Text Service, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. If you are, you'll get the final injury report of the week. You'll get game day inactives. You'll get any significant in-game injury updates. You'll get any significant Orioles roster moves as far as see comings and goings and who might get promoted, who might get sent back. Any significant local sports news sent directly to your mobile device via the WNST Baltimore Positive Text Service, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. And of course, anything throughout the week on AM 1570 with Nestor. Ravens players and coaches interviews from Owings Mills. Orioles players and coaches interviews from Camden Yards. Check out all of that at BaltimorePositive.com.
All right, look, I appreciate you. Let's hope we have some halfway decent weather for the Ravens home game this Sunday, and the Orioles keep going with their winning ways.
Yeah, by the time we talk next week, Dennis, who knows? We could be talking about a 3-0 Ravens team, and we could be talking about an Orioles team, AL East champions, number one seed in the AL. It's not far-fetched on either account, so certainly a lot to happen between now and then, but look forward to it as always, Dennis.
You got to stay well, my friend. There it goes, Luke Jones here on 1570 AM, Baltimore Positive, WNST. We'll take a quick break and come back right after this.